Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of mind power. Well, I think you're really going to enjoy the show today, and if you're like me, sort of in, well, isolated with snow and ice all around you, you can cozy up to the computer, maybe do some letter writing, fixing some of those email cards, and at the same time, get educated about something special. What's that? Money. Yes. We're going to be talking about how to get rich, stay rich, and then you get to pass it on. But we'd like to think you're going to enjoy it before you pass it on. But my guest today is Catherine S. McBreen. She and an associate, George Wolper Jr., put together a very interesting book about how we can accumulate wealth and secrets of America's richest families. Kathleen, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Well, I know I asked you before we went on air if I could call you Kathy, and you said that was perfectly all right, so
yes,
I'm going to do that. Kathy, you have a very interesting background, and the stats that you give in your book about the wealthy people of America, I was very intrigued with. You yourself are the managing director of Spectrum Group. You're a research and consulting company. You have been studying the wealthy since 1991. You've worked as a consultant. You've got a degree in law. You have also been involved in trust and wealth management as a specialist in the industry. You really like working with the wealthy because that's exactly what you're involved with. And you're fascinated with what you call the dynamics of their ongoing success. George Wolper, your associate, he is the president of Spectrum Group. He has, for more than 25 years, has been involved with consulting and giving insights to people regarding all levels of wealth management, investment management, brokerage, and trust industries, and you both have been involved with the Wall Street Journal. You've been on CBS and all kinds of different stations, and I'm so pleased to have you with me today.
Thank you.
Kathy, I want to ask you a question. This is sort of on a personal level. Why is it that you wanted to be involved with the extremely affluent? What affluent? Why did you decide that this was an arena you really wanted to have hands-on with?
Well, I think there's a lot of reasons. Most of all, there are many of us who want to be like them, obviously, mm-hmm. that want to be able to figure out how did they get all that wealth and is there a way that I can do that too. So that was one of the reasons. And one of the second reasons is that in a lot of cases, they're people that are just like you and me. They aren't the people that we think of like the Rockefellers and all of those types of big names. They are people that, you know, live in our neighborhoods or are in our communities that may have put away a lot of wealth, and there's things that we can do that they've done that aren't so difficult.
Now, you broke down certain categories. What you call the mass affluent, that's anywhere from what?
100 people, households that have $100,000 in what we call investable assets, meaning not your house, but money that you might have in the bank, you might have it in a brokerage account, you might have it, you know, in other types of securities. So what we call the mass affluent are people that are between $100,000, have between $100,000 and $1 million tucked away somewhere.
Now, there are, in the United States at this time, according to...
No, at the time of the book.
At the time of the book. Okay, let's do that, because there may have been a few that fell by the wayside.
Yes.
At the time of the book, 33,400,000 people were in that category. The second category were the millionaires.
That's correct.
And that's from 1 million to 5 million.
That's correct.
And not including, again, the primary residence. The book was done. We have to clarify that. 7,900,000 people in that category. And then those people, the mega millionaires, there are 1,140,000 of those people.
Mm-hmm.
Those are sizable numbers.
Yes. Yes, they are, and especially when you talk about those mass affluent households, because those are a lot of the people that you probably talk with or meet on a day-to-day basis. You know, people that have good jobs. They put money away. They may be saving in their 401k, and they're people who are just, you know, or were, just on the tip of the iceberg of starting to have a really solid amount of money that they could be able to do things that they wanted to with.
Let's talk about something that's really been in the news for quite a while, and that is so much. Let's digress for just a moment. We've got these people that have had all these assets, and as we have been inferring, some of them have perhaps not been able to make it. There's those that maybe were right on that edge where they could say, gee, I was one of the affluent, or maybe I was becoming the mega millionaire, and then all of these various things within the banks, et cetera, have gone kaputsy. So they may have lost that. How, you know, there are so many questions people are asking right now. Where is this really going to be a safe place to put my money? How am I going to manage this? Can I ever trust the banks? Are stocks really worth investing in? What can one do? It just seems like there's so much instability and the lack of confidence of the average person with a lot of the financial industry seems to really be on the low side. What would you want the audience to know about relative to that?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, just as a sidebar, we just finished a study of 750 millionaire households, so you know, that we've done in the last 3 weeks. So we know exactly what they're thinking and exactly how they're feeling and exactly what they're going to do with their assets in the future. And as you can expect, many of them are moving towards cash investments.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, one of the things that we've also found, which is quite interesting to us and it kind of makes us feel good about our book, is that there are a lot of people who their investment real estate portfolios is something that they feel very strongly about, and they feel confident that they haven't lost as much in that. Now, we're not talking about the real estate portfolios where somebody, you know, bought a house with the idea of rehabbing it and flipping it. That's
mm-hmm.
not a good investment. But the wealth accumulation that we've seen through the centuries and through the last few decades is very similar to some of the things that are happening now where someone, you know, they bought an apartment building, they're paying off the mortgage because they've done the math, they know that the rents are covering the amount that they owe in the building, and, you know, they're holding it for a long term, they're holding it for 15 or 20 years as opposed to thinking about flipping real estate. So real estate is obviously one of the things that we're seeing that has done well. Investments in private companies continue to do pretty well, depending on the company, of course. There are some small companies that are being, you know, badly impacted by this crisis. And then, as I mentioned, we're seeing a lot of investors moving towards cash-based investments. In the research that we just completed, though, the younger people are the ones that are more interested in buying equities.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, you said there are two primary secrets, and you've mentioned one, and that's
mm-hmm.
real estate. What is the second primary secret?
The second secret that we've seen people who've been able to build very substantial amounts of wealth is based a little bit on, one, understanding what or believing in what they know, and secondly, in being willing to take a little bit of risk, and that is being able to invest in what we call entrepreneurial businesses. And it's really, it doesn't mean that you have to invent the internet. It doesn't mean you have to be Bill Gates and create Windows. It means that there are a lot of families where they may be in a particular business, and then they see something that is related to their business that they've also invested in that's been able to bring a lot of wealth to them. So, for example, we interviewed a doctor who's very wealthy who had started out as an anesthesiologist and understood that there was a need for a certain kind of, you know, equipment within the operating rooms that anesthesiologists needed. Well, he knew that. He understood that. So he invested money along with some other individuals in creating a type of instrument, you know, that sold very well to almost all the hospitals, and he became very wealthy. So it was a little risk-based, and it was knowledge-based as well. Some of the things were just as simple as, you know, people knowing that they needed, you know, ice cream stores in their town, the local communities, and being willing to invest some money in that and, you know, manage from afar, but be able to create a line of, you know, ice cream stores because they saw a need for that in their community. So it's sort of like taking what you know and trusting yourself and going out a little bit on the edge.
I'd like to ask you a question because you talked about this latest research finding that you had about the 750 million households. How do you go about doing this research? Is it on the internet? Is it by mail? Do you have a staff that makes phone calls? How do you do this? That's a substantial number.
That's a good question. What we do it in different ways. In this particular study that we just finished, we first did focus groups in 5 different cities where people come to focus group facilities. And the reason that we do that is to be able to test, you know, what are the really hot topics to make sure that we're understanding them. And then we go online and do the studies. We used to do more studies, you know, male-based studies, but in the last, you know, 5 years, we've noticed that because the population, most of these people tend to be a little bit older, but most people, even if they get 90% of people of these wealthy investors are already online. So we're comfortable now that we can do a lot online. We also do research every month to keep current on hot topics and people's attitudes, and we do that via the telephone. You may ask, why do people respond to these questions, or why are they willing to share secrets with you? And the reason is, to be honest, we pay them. So even people who have lots of money, sometimes they're willing to share their life stories for some cash. And we used to say, oh, we'll give it to a charity of your choice. And we found that we're more successful in actually saying, we'll give you $500 for your, you know, your life story, and you can do what you want with it.
Mm-hmm.
And we find that people are more open to that because, you know, they may keep it themselves. That's why they're wealthy to begin with.
Well, that's a very good observation. But I was curious because there is the understanding that statistics can often be manipulated any way
that's
that you
correct.
Want. So it's how do you do this? What kind of questions do you ask? So on and so forth. It was just a point of curiosity.
Yeah. No, that's true. And the other thing that we do is a part of the questionnaires that we create is we create questions in different ways so that you have to be consistent in the way you're asking them. And if people weren't being honest, they would get caught up in the way that questions were asked. Because sometimes we ask them to, you know, fill in their assets in one way, and then we ask them to backtrack into them in different ways. And they'd have to be really quite clever to be thinking the whole time.
Mm-hmm. Okay, very good. That is very good information. It is, by anyone's observation that lives long enough, whenever there is a great deal of wealth, and you bring up the story of the Vanderbilts. Now, your book is titled Get Rich, you know, How to Get Rich, Stay Rich, and Then Pass It On. Well, often by the third generation, with most of the wealth, it's dissipated. It's disappeared. Somebody else has accumulated it. There's very seldom those people that do know how to manage money successfully and ongoing in families. It's just a factor of human nature. You bring this out with your statement, history confirms this very thing, that the amount of money one passes on is not the key determinant in how long the money will last. So this is part of what you work with also. You, in your book, you talk about various types of advisors and various ways that you can go about doing research. Let's, before we get into what we're going to do with all this money that we're going to have that we can gift to whatever or whomever we want, let's talk about if we're at a point we are wanting to really look at how we can make our money work for us effectively and well. What would your recommendation be? Let's say someone's making $120,000 a year, might be a combined income between a husband and wife, or maybe it's just one member of the family, and they've pretty much got a good credit record, and they don't have a lot of challenges in front of them financially. How would you start off with somebody like that?
Well, I think obviously the first thing you will say to the person is, obviously, pay off your credit cards, all of those types of things. Be investing in your 401k. Those are things that are given. Most of the people that we find that are in the mass affluent are people that know those things. So, you know, it's sort of pithy to be able to be having to tell them those kinds of things. But for those of who have a substantial amount of money to invest, let's say you had $120,000, it's good to look at it in two ways. One, are you going to be on a day-to-day basis willing to be doing research and figuring out how to invest it? Or two, do you think that you need some type of advisor? Now, I'm not advising on any particular type of advisor over another, but we do find that younger households tend to lean towards financial planners, and older households use full-service brokers. Obviously, the impact of what's happened in the last few weeks may change people's perceptions, but it is always good to have an outsider, whether you really want them to be investing your money or to just be giving you some financial advice. So that's always a good thing to do. And then as overall, as far as your portfolio is concerned, we would always be, you know, do appropriate asset allocation, as an advisor would tell you. But we would also say keep a small portion out for investment types of real estate, and also look around you for opportunities. You may not want to invest the biggest chunk of your assets in those types of opportunities that are, you know, entrepreneurial, but think about it. Think about keeping a small chunk of that, and think about keeping a portion of your assets. There's some charts and graphs in the book that show you different asset allocations or percentages that we would recommend to invest in investment types of real estate. One of the things that we found is most interesting is, like, there will be grandparents who, over the years, bought apartment buildings that ultimately they're going to give to each of their grandchildren, with the concept of that child can, you know, keep the income from that, or they can choose to sell that building and do what they want with those assets. But it's really long-term planning as opposed to something that's happening in the short term.
In today's world, we have so many various challenges evolving in the area of finances. Cash always talks, and that is something that just about everybody knows. You bring out some very good examples of individuals who have saved their cash, then they go and they make an investment maybe in a piece of the machinery, or they are able to literally save thousands of dollars because they can walk into an environment and say, I have XYZ cash. Do you want the cash?
Right.
Or do you want the credit? And it's amazing how that negotiating position can be so powerful.
Right.
So, again, cash talks. You talk about a man in your book. His name is Mr. Chartoff. And I was fascinated with him because he reminded me a lot of Warren Buffett. And that may sound wacky, but he really did. He's just really down to earth. Tell us about this gentleman. He's quite the guy when it comes to planning.
Well, to be honest with you, we gave them different names, so give me a clue
okay.
and I'll tell you.
This was Philip Chartoff, who was in Chicago.
Okay.
And he's very, very wealthy, but he was the son of a Russian immigrant.
Yes. Yes.
You got him. Okay.
I got it. So I apologize for that, but we did give them each of these people different names. This gentleman was definitely one of your World War II generation types. And he was very, very smart in that when he was in the Army and Navy, he worked in the intelligence back in World War II. So he was obviously very bright. But one of the things that he did was he decided to invest in FM radio stations at a time when only AM radio stations were popular. And because of that, he obviously, everything changed over to FM radios in the 50s, the 60s more, and 70s probably. And he was able to be very successful because of that. The other thing that he did was he invested in television stations in his local vicinity, and he also invested in magazines as well. So he was very successful in being able to take these different types of businesses, and he just took some risks. He also originally owned a hardware store. His mother did. Well, his father had owned it and passed away, and during World War II, his mother was able to take the hardware store and kept it very successful during World War II. But when he came back, he was able to take that hardware store and basically start to sell different types of generators and products and really start to distribute as opposed to just be a hardware store. So he was a very forward-thinking man.
You have, as part of your book, some wonderful to-do lists, if you will. If you want to make an evaluation regarding how you can personally plan to get rich, stay rich, and pass it on, you have checklists that people
uh-huh.
can utilize throughout the book, which I think is wonderful because it enables people, if they choose to do so, to have what I'd call a black-and-white reality that they can work with. And I really think saving is a great thing to do, and that's a way people can begin. There may be a lot of my listeners that say, gee, Donna, dream on. I have never had $120,000 in my lifetime as an earning level. But there are many people, just like Mr. Chartoff, that started off with very little.
Yeah. Can I tell you my favorite story in the book?
Oh, please do.
There's a man that we interviewed that basically his father died, and he was left a snowplow. That's basically all he was left. But it happened to be in the early 60s when shopping malls were being built. And so this gentleman was smart enough to take his snowplow, which was all that he had, and be able to negotiate contracts with these shopping malls to be able to plow the shopping mall parking lots, right, when it snowed. And he told stories of having his young sons in the truck with him as he snowplowed because, you know, they couldn't afford a babysitter. Well, over the years, he built a not construction company, but really a concrete company and was able to, you know, continue to build this service. He also invested in things like, you know, small stores in the neighborhood. He would buy odd pieces of land because he was in this building and, you know, digging type of business, pieces of land that nobody would want. And so over the years, he, you know, started to own lots of little pieces of land. And, for example, a few months ago or a few years ago now, I guess it was, he sold a piece of land that was basically swamp by anyone else's, you know, looks, and he sold it to Walmart for $8 million. So he was just able over the years to take the little that he had, used a lot of cash-based investments, and still was able to continue to build this business out. So it was really a wonderful story of a person who really went from nothing and continued to do what he knew and invest in what seemed logical to him by what he knew in the geography he was in and become very wealthy. He actually at one point decided that, you know, when you build a road, somebody has to crush the stuff when they're rebuilding the old road. And he bought the only type of vehicle or equipment than anyone in the half the state that he lives in. So all of the other people who compete with him have to come to him to crush the concrete up when they're making a new road. So he's been very smart.
Isn't it amazing how there are certain things that are everyday needs that most people won't even be aware of? It's not even in their psyche. But a gentleman like him said somebody needed a concrete crusher.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody else wanted to do it. He's
exactly.
doing it. And he doesn't care if he's the only concrete crusher in the world.
Right. I mean, somebody's got to do it.
Somebody's got to do it. And there are so many things like that that are available for people. I know of someone that he made his millions cleaning floors.
There you go.
So there's nothing in this world that if you're willing to work with it and you have that capacity of seeing the bigger picture where it can evolve. Not that life doesn't throw snowballs at us every once in a while. It certainly does. Sometimes it's chunks of iceberg, too.
A lot of people are feeling that way right now.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, Kathy, one of the areas that you touch on are advisors. And, of course, there's ad infinitum of inviters, as advisors. What would you tell my listeners relative to if you're not confident, if you're not feeling secure, maybe you came into an inheritance of money and you really want to make that money work for you, whether it's $3,000, $300,000, what would you tell them about advisors?
I think that right now it's probably a popular opinion to not be with advisors, but I would recommend against that. And the reason is because there are things that most advisors know that many of us don't have the time or inclination to find out about. Not that we're not smart enough, but it's just a lot of time and effort to be able to think about all the things that we need to do. Depending upon how much time you have, though, there may be different types of advisors that are good for you. As I mentioned, younger people seem to like financial planners. And you really, some financial planners will actually invest money for you. Others may not invest the money for you, but will really help you come up with a plan of what you need to be doing with your money. Full-service brokers are getting a bad rap because obviously they've had some bad luck in the last few months. But there are different types of full-service brokers who are very well attuned to what's going on in the market. And you really kind of have to test for yourself how smart you feel the person you're working with is. I mean, granted, just as in every type of occupation, there are some that are better than others. So you really need to test out your advisor, see how proactive he or she is, test their knowledge levels, you know, ask about not just investments, but how things impact your portfolio, you know, what are the tax consequences? Does this make sense in light of your overall picture? Usually we find that people are happy with their advisor if they feel like their advisor is looking at them overall as opposed to just looking at their investments or for the investments for that day. You know, if somebody's just saying, oh, you really need to buy XYZ stock, that may not be the right person for you.
I think whenever you're working with an advisor, there is a very personal level of trust.
Absolutely.
And that is something that with so many individuals, that trust they feel has been violated by various scenarios that have occurred. So what would be a way that someone could research an advisor if they're saying, I just don't know of anybody that's really that knowledgeable or that interested in becoming wealthy as I am? how do I go about looking for someone? What do I use as a measuring point?
Mm-hmm. Well, to be honest, the best thing that we found is, and most advisors would tell you this as well, is that the largest number of people choose an advisor because of a referral from a friend or a family member or somebody that they know in the community. That could be somebody from the soccer team that your kid's on, you know. And that's the way that most advisors will find their clients. Now, is that person right for you? Only you can judge that by the types of conversation that he or she has with you. Also, there are ways, obviously, to go on the Internet and, you know, test out a name, test out whatever you can, because that's all available to us now. What we anticipate will happen in the next 12 months, which hasn't happened in the past, is we do anticipate that people are going to be looking at individual advisors and trying to find ways to benchmark that particular advisor's overall, you know, success rate. How well did this person measure up against the market? And even though most individuals understand that no one has a positive record at this particular time, there may be some who've done better against the markets than others did, and there may be some, as we hope the economy starts to rebuild itself, that will be doing better. And I think that people will be looking a little more closely at their advisors and how they've actually looking for more quantitative information about that particular advisor and how they've performed.
I know we don't have a heck of a lot of time here, but on the last, for me, it's always, how can a person have a quality of life? And what is wealth to one person is not wealth to someone else. We all have our own individual pictures and expectations. But let's say we're ready and maybe we've matured as an individual and we've got all these wonderful assets. There really is a process for planning about what we want done with it. And in your book, you go into some information on trust. You present some various positionings. You also talk about some individuals who, just like one of the first stories that you told about, these grandparents left to their grandchildren the legacy of apartment buildings and gave them the choice of how they could work with them, with a financial advisor that they had worked with for so many years. There are so many options for people to consider. And if you don't want your money going to the state that you live in, you obviously need to have a will and you need to figure out what it is that you want done with whatever assets you have. And you do a very nice job of being able to cover that in your book.
Thank you. It's a very important thing. You know, we've done studies, and I think the information's in the book, that about 60% of baby boomers haven't even thought about an estate plan yet. And it's really something that you just never know when you're going to need it. So obviously it's something that you can think about. And if you add in the value of your home to your assets, in a lot of cases, even these mass affluent people will fall into a place where they need to really think about estate taxes and estate planning. So, you know, as much as it's a hard thing to think about, people need to get involved in some estate planning. There can be very smart people who, for example, there was one gentleman whose family we interviewed who had passed away and everything was just in an IRA account. So it was very difficult to unwind all those assets because, you know, they weren't properly placed the way that they should have been. Mm-hmm. So it's really an important thing to think about, even though it's a hard thing to think about. And it also, small business owners, a lot of families, we find that a lot of the wealth is within that family business. So you have to deal with either, are you going to pass the business on to a son or daughter, or are we going to liquidate this business in some way and then pass it on? And that's a hard thing for people to think about.
Yeah, it puts you in a whole different mindset. And so it's not doomsday, but the reality is none of us are going to stay here forever.
Right.
So we do have to look at that, and it's prudent to be ahead of the game rather than leaving somebody with a mess that may keep them in probate for 5 or 10 years.
Exactly.
I loved one of the quotes that you have in here. And by the way, I want to be sure and give out your website because it's millionairecorner.com. That's millionairecorner.com. You can go to that website. They've got all kinds of information and material that you can utilize. And Chartoff had a statement that I wanted to quote. He said, some years a monkey can do better in the market than an investment manager. It's all a game of luck and thinking. And I think that a lot of people would hear that, say amen to that.
Especially right now, right?
So do you have a thought for us in the last 30 seconds that we have?
I think it's a difficult financial time for everyone right now, but some of these strategies are ones that have worked through the generations, and I think that they'll continue to work.
I agree. They worked for a lot of people that came out of World War One and World War Two, and by golly, there's always ups and downs. Nothing is ever in a straight line, and this is really a good book with good information. And Kathleen McBreen, I want to thank you so much for being my guest today.
Well, thank you.
It has been a pleasure. Don't forget, get rich, stay rich, pass it on. This is The Wealth Accumulation, Secrets of America's Richest Families. If you want to know how they're doing it, this is the book to get. Donna Sebo here. We are taking a break. Don't forget to go to their website, which is millionairecorner.com, for more insights as to how you, as an individual, can plan for your own financial freedom. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go anywhere. We got good things to share.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay only $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 1-800-872-8852. That's 1-800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Gedros. Buy it today. 1-800-872-8852.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and telephone lines are now open. If you would like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, here are the telephone numbers to call in to 877-876-5227, 877-876-5227. For those of you in Canada as well as the U.S., call 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. And remember, if you're a first-time listener, or if you're a regular, all I need is your first name or initial. That's all I need. And then when you call in, of course, I love to know what part of the country you're calling in from. And then after that, I will give you my mental impressions, and then you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that you want some information on. I'm an information resource, and I'm delighted to share my skills and abilities with you during the show. Now, by the way, where I am in the Pacific Northwest, we have snow ever so gently falling from the gray-white skies above us, and it's been just absolutely magical here. Of course, it's not been also magical driving on the roads. However, if you take your time, you get to wherever you want to go very nicely. And then this cold front is going to be staying with us, I think, until just before Christmas, and then we're going to be going from the teens in temperatures all the way up to the 40s. Woo-hoo! It's going to be like bikini weather. Yep. Oh, yeah, big deal. 40s in the west. No, not quite there. I'm exaggerating a little bit. I just wanted to share with you a poem by Lacey McKay. The malls are bustling with people, each with a list to fill, while children whisper secrets in a jolly old elf's ear. Soon visions of toys and sugar plums will dance through every head. But first, we must get ready, for Christmas will soon be here. Ah, yes, with the snow falling out here and outside my office window, and then we had sunlight that was coming through the trees, and the trees were just like lightly airbrushed with golden rays of light. Oh, it was just incredible to see. When you get those moments in this kind of an environment, it's just absolutely magical, and it really gets you in the feel for the holidays. Donna Siebel here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 877-8765-227 or 888-815-9756. I wanted to share some information with you about viruses and how, instead of making us sick, they're using them to actually develop a new kind of a battery. Now, this is what has been evolving at MIT with a group of engineers. They have found that they could actually harness viruses to make components for a battery. Now, this is brand new. It's half the size of a human cell and far more efficient than a AAA battery. Now, you know how little those AAAs are. Well, what they did, they used a thread-like virus that was genetically engineered so that electrically conductive materials, such as cobalt oxide, would bind to its surface. Now, because this virus is so long and thin, it has a lot of surface area relative to its volume, and they found that a lot of electrical charge can be packed into this itsy-bitsy amount of space. They metal coat this microbe, and thus, they said they can use it to build energy storage devices with a power density much higher than that of traditional batteries. Now, vision a AAA-sized battery and an itsy-bitsy thread-like virus. Boy, what a difference. Now, when they can do that, it has a power density, as I said, much higher than regular batteries. And eventually, after their use, they degrade. The metal structure they create holds, and that structure is strong enough to be transferred and embedded onto another surface. So the team, what they've done, they've been able at MIT to create a battery with one virus-built terminal and one conventional terminal, and it's working on a battery with both terminals virus-built. And they said these micro-batteries, they think eventually, will be able to power all kinds of miniaturized electronics, including tiny medical implants. And Mr. Hammond, who is at MIT, he said this whole idea of building a battery being a heavy, dirty chemical process doesn't have to exist. We can imagine printing batteries onto different surfaces. It's amazing, absolutely amazing what people will come up with. And it's just that wonderful, innovative, creative side of the human mind. My husband and I were discussing the other day about how so many people, Jules Verne, you think of the stories that he wrote so many years ago. His imagination was so vivid. Look at how much of this imaginative stuff he had put into writing has actually evolved. Also, Arthur C. Clarke, who was the leading science fiction writer in the world, he just passed away a short time ago, and whenever I pick up one of his books and read them, I'm in awe of the way that this man's mind envisioned things. And they're not that far off in the future. It's really something special. So if you have a youngster that has this vivid imagination and you don't ever tell them they're ridiculous, don't ever tell them they're ridiculous, because it's that creativity that puts out the seeds for progress, believe it or not, and for that inventiveness, where someone can actually make this world a better place in ways that you and I may not even ever be able to conceive. But they are there sitting and thinking about it and working with it until it actually happens. It's quite exciting. quite wonderful. Well, you're getting ready for the holidays, and sometimes you're getting frazzled. Well, those of us here in the Pacific Northwest, we're finding we're not venturing out very much because the roads are so icy, and we're enjoying looking out our windows and watching the snow falling as it is right now. But we sometimes when you have kids, you wonder what you're going to do. You say, oh, gee whiz, the children are going to drive me nuts. Well, what you might want to do is involve them in baking up ornaments. And maybe they could give them as gifts to friends or to family. But it's a way of keeping them occupied. And you can do something so simple as sugar cookies and just get some items out, put on some Christmas music, maybe have some fun movies that you can pick up and just play, and just make it a family event if you can, and just enjoy being inside and being together. And the smell of cookies baking are just, it's absolutely magical. Now, by the way, when you are making the cookies, and I know about a week or so ago I had given a recipe for this, but Rachel Stebald, she makes treats, and she's in New York City. She said, you can make your own recipe to make 3-inch round vanilla, chocolate, or gingerbread cookies, baking them an extra amount of time. She said a minute, but you might just want to, after you bake them, just let them sit in a warm oven for a while, letting them really get very, very firm. Don't forget to put a hole in the cookie somewhere so that you can have something to put a ribbon through, and you can do that with a straw. And when you are ready to decorate them, just make it so that you can leave them out overnight so that they will really harden. And, of course, they're just fun for the kids to give away as gifts, or even if you wanted to hang them on a tree. Also, if you want to keep the kids occupied, playing free online games is the way to go. And I found out about a couple of websites. One's called Shockwave.com, Shockwave.com, and PopCap.com, PopCap.com. They've got all kinds of free action and puzzle games that kids can play. And for really little ones, you've got a place called The Kids Page, and it's The Kid Z Page. It's not an S. The Kids Page. So it's THEKIDZPAGE.com and then NorthPole.com. They have all kinds of pages that you could print out for the little ones to color, games for them to play. So just a few odds and ends there. By the way, if you're going to be putting out candles as part of your decoration, sometimes you have to watch the candles. If you get decorative candles like I have gotten, many times they're made in such a way that as they're burning, they may end up dripping badly onto whatever is surrounding them. So you want to be very thoughtful about what you have candles near. But something that makes a real nice centerpiece, you can spread kosher salt, and it looks sort of sparkly, and it looks like white glitter. And you can put it in the tray or box that you're going to have your candles in. So if those candles melt in an odd formation, that could perhaps cause something to catch on fire. So if you have the salt there, you won't have to worry about it. And you can sort of pack it up and make it look like snowdrifts. And it's just going to do a great job of hiding whatever maybe is up the base. And hey, when time comes, you can just throw it all away. It's just really neat. And if you get any wax that falls off, it goes right onto the salt, and no harm done. And someone gave a suggestion about making a wreath out of gumdrops. And I remember when I was a kid growing up, we would make Christmas trees out of gumdrops. And we might use, you know, something like styrofoam and just put the gumdrops on toothpicks and put them in there, and you'd have this real, real colorful gumdrop Christmas tree. And often we'd use different candies and things like that to give that wonderful effect. And, of course, it was all edible, and it didn't last very long once everybody knew they could go after it. But it was fun. It was, you know, just very colorful. And you can do the same thing to make a wreath. But you can break your toothpicks in half that you're going to stick the gumdrops on and just put one end of the broken toothpick into the gumdrop and the other end into the inner edge of the wreath, and my goodness, you're going to have something pretty and colorful, and all of that good stuff is edible. Just be sure to watch the little ones with the toothpicks if they happen to pull any out. So those are just some tips that were passed along to me that I'm going to pass them along to you, and we're going to pass along right into a break here. No, you can give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. We're going to be back in just a moment.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, TTAP.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's T-TAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, TTAP.com.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. Telephone number 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. And Canadians as well as people in the U.S., 888-815-9756. All I need is your first name or initial, and then let me share with you what I perceive intuitively, and then you're welcome to ask me a question, whatever you like. I'd like to tell you about our lineup for next week. We've got a great group of people, and I do know it's Christmas week, and I know you're going to be so busy. On Monday, we're going to be having Jack and Elaine LaLanne. That's right, Jack LaLanne, who is one of the icons of physical fitness and wellness. He's been around for 94 years, going on to 95, and this man is still active. Do you know he exercises every day for 2 hours? He was a guest on my show a couple of years ago. And it was just amazing to me. He swims an hour every day, and then he works with weights an hour every day. And he's going around teaching other people in their 90s how to gain back their strength. He's just amazing. And his wife is delightful. She's in her 80s and just as active as anybody could ever be. So these are two people that are prime examples for us, and what a good time to have them on just before Christmas. Then we're going to be talking on Tuesday with Cassandra Vitrin, Living Deeply. Living life with meaning, with passion. And then on Wednesday, Christmas Eve day, Ron Clancy is going to be my guest. Ron was going to be on with me earlier this month, but was stuck in an airport and he couldn't do the show. So we are going to have him, and we're going to be talking about Christmas music, and we're going to be playing it. We're going to be talking about how music evolved. So this is a wonderful man. He's been a regular on my show every year around the holidays for a few years now. He's just so amazing in being able to tell us how things evolved musically and how we have so many of the traditions we have today. And, of course, on Christmas Day, my Christmas special will be played. I'll be doing storytelling. There will be no interruptions throughout the whole thing. It's a great program for the family, so I know you're going to be busy. I'm going to be busy with my friends and family as well. But on Friday, on the 26th, we're going to be right back, right here live on DBS Radio. We're going to be talking with Maya about the power of illusions. And so this will be a discussion we'll have. And then also we're going to be talking about the Shopper's Guide to Healthy Living. And another guest that's going to be coming up before the end of this month is Dr. Sun Lee on brainwave vibration. We're going to be learning how, no matter what our age, we can always improve our capacity for thinking and for learning. So that is what is coming up. I hope you'll tell your friends, and that also you'll join me right here on the Donna Sebo Show. Well, you know, if you're sort of feeling, I was talking about viruses being made into batteries, but so often during this time of the year, we find that viruses like to keep companion with us and will not feel too well. So the idea is when you're sort of feeling a little bit lethargic and your energy's not where it is, and maybe you're overly tired because you're trying to do everything with the holidays coming up, well, what you need to realize is that if you take good care of yourself, get your rest, and you do eat well, you need to know that this is all going to keep you pretty healthy during the entire winter season. The University of Nebraska did a study on chicken soup. And you'd think after all these generations it would have been figured out, but I guess not. There's always a newer generation that wants to know why chicken soup has been recommended for so long to really help people get well. It actually does help to cure a cold. It affects the movement of neutrophils, white cells, that are fighting infection. Now, Stephen Chang, who is a staff physician at RightHealth.com, he said scientists really have not been able to figure out to this day why chicken soup is so effective, but they do know that the ingredients that frequently are in mom's homemade chicken soup are parsley, pepper, and garlic, and they have antibacterial compound. Plus, chicken itself contains an amino acid that chemically is similar to a prescription drug that helps to clear mucus from the lungs. So when mom tells you chicken soup, that's what you need, go for it. And I think a good way to have it is when you are making your homemade chicken soup. If a person really is not feeling very well, often they're not interested in dealing with chunks of meat or anything else, use a blender. Just go ahead, or if you have a Vitamix, just put it in, blend it up, heat it up for a few seconds in a pan or in a microwave, and it's just great. I tell you what I like to put in mine, and I know that my husband always laughs when I do this. Tabasco sauce. Oh, yes. I believe chilies have a healing component that just cannot be beat. I like spice, and that really will get you warmed up so quickly. You don't have to have a cold to enjoy that. But it's just a little bit of that heat, you know, the chipotle Tabasco sauce. I have to laugh. One time I was at the store and I had four bottles of it, and the gal who I try to always see, she's my favorite checker at my grocery store, she said, Donna, you're not going to eat this stuff, are you? You're really not going to use this. I said, of course, this is mild, but oh, it's so flavorful. She said, oh boy. It really does work, and I very rarely have a cold. But it's just something, it just sort of spices it up, especially when those temps are really, really cold. And also, too, they found that chocolate is very good for coughs. Hey, can you beat that? The main ingredient in chocolate, theobromine, is far more effective at stopping a cough than prescription cough medicine. Ah, yes, and they've done a study on this, too, and it's especially true with dark chocolate. It quiets coughs 33% better than cough medicines containing codeine, and it lasts a full 4 hours. Yes, anything that supports chocolate. Good idea. Now, why does it work? Why is chocolate so good at this? In the research, they found it works by suppressing the vagus nerve, which is responsible for causing the cough. In a study done, most cough syrups are no better than water at providing relief. So, why not give your child or yourself something that has dark chocolate in it instead of cough syrup the next time he or she gets a cough? Sounds like a winner to me. I don't see anything wrong with that, and I think it'd be good just to add a little bit of peppermint to it. Don't you think so? One of those little candy canes stirred in the hot chocolate? I think that's a good addition. This is Donna Siebel, and I know that we're just about out of time. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul, and wherever you are, whatever you're doing, these months sometimes can be, well, a little rough when it comes to driving, and I know you might be going out there for your holiday shopping and doing all kinds of errands, but just be cautious. Be aware. Be patient. Lots of times people get really stressed during this time of the year, and you don't want to be there. So just enjoy yourself wherever you are. Take a deep breath. Give yourself extra time to get to where you want to go, because there is so much about this holiday season that is meant to be enjoyed. So don't rush. Enjoy yourself. And hey, be back here on Monday with me. But in the interim, have a fabulous, fabulous weekend. And we'll be back here on Monday, same time, same place, with the Jack LaLanne family. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Siebel Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Siebel Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.